Days after the massacre in Buffalo, the response from political leaders has turned not to the usual conversation on guns, but to the power of the racist ideology that fuels attacks like this one. Lisa Desjardins is here with more.
Judy, for the political response to this tragedy, as well as a look ahead to some critical primary races tomorrow, I'm joined by our always thoughtful Political Monday team. That is Amy Walter of the Cook Political Report with Amy Walter and Tamara Keith of NPR. Politics Monday is here. Hello. Let's start off with this another unspeakable shooting, and some people here in Washington especially are looking at the words of some Republicans, including this from Elise Stefanik, the representative who is in House Republican leadership. This is a Facebook ad she posted last year, a campaign ad. It warns of a, quote, permanent election insurrection and defines that as the arrival of undocumented immigrants. Now, Stefanik has disavowed the Buffalo shooting. She represents a district in New York. But some do see that ad as a reference to this, what we hear about, the white replacement theory, which the suspect in the Buffalo shooting wrote about. Amy, I want to start with you. What do you think is going on underneath here? Why are some Republicans feeding or maybe not actively trying to address white anger?
I think as this piece, as the lead-in alluded to, you know, lots of times when these things happen, these horrible tragedies involving guns, we talk about the Second Amendment. In this case, we're focusing on the First Amendment. And so the issue really about, well, what is free speech exactly? It's been with us for a very long time. What you can and cannot say, what is what's inciting violence, what is simply okay to be able to talk about. And that is a debate that we've been having most recently about what gets posted on the internet, right? And whose responsibility is that? But it's also in the political dialogue as well, which is we know that the rhetoric just keeps getting ramped up and ramped up and ramped up. And this idea that there are, you know, this is just a political, that it won't seep into the broader society is not true, right? The more that leaders, people who are in leadership positions, are willing to either excuse it or find ways to sort of switch the topic, the harder it becomes for leaders to stand up and say, actually, we can draw a line. There is a First Amendment, but this, just not acceptable. And we need to hold ourselves, even if internet companies or the broader world won't hold us to those standards, we need to do it.
And speaking of leaders, there was a tweet from another Republican, former member of leadership, Liz Cheney, who tweeted, the GOP leadership has enabled white nationalism, white supremacy, and anti-Semitism. Tam, these are kinds of ideas, white replacement theory, that used to be way on the fringe. How are they now in the political mainstream for
yes.
some people?
So white replacement theory was KKK neo-Nazi stuff. And then it started seeping in theory, more palatable form, right? Instead of white replacement theory, it's political replacement theory. That ad from Elise Stefanik was the idea that Democrats or somebody wants to bring in lots of illegal immigrants who could then become legal and become American citizens and vote and replace Native American or, you know, native-born American voters. That's the theory behind this.
You, conservative voter.
Conservative voters. That there would be a liberal majority. that is how it went from the fringes to the main, sort of the Republican mainstream. And you had in Charlottesville, those people marching, chanting with tiki torches, saying, Jews will not replace us, you will not replace us. That was replacement theory in a way that was unpalatable. But in the years...
But at least was clear. It was clear what they were saying.
Yes. And in the years since then, it has become something that is discussed in politics as like, this is something that is going to happen and that somebody wants this to happen. And it is not in the exact same terms as white replacement theory, and that is what Stefanik's spokesperson pushed back on. She doesn't have racist ideas. She's simply saying that there shouldn't be amnesty. It all mixes and melds together.
Right, and that's the whole thing about what is free speech and what is hateful rhetoric that incites people to do terrible things.
And then what is there to do? New White House press secretary on her first day on the job, Karine Jean-Pierre, was asked today if the White House should push back more, call out people by name like Tucker Carlson. We talked about him on this show last night. And we play a role too, right, in the media? So my question for you guys is, do voters hear these ideas challenged enough? And if not, who and where, how does that happen, Amy?
Well, as you know, Lisa, the part of the problem is we have media bubbles. Yeah. There is not cross-pollination. And so there are people who are paying very close attention to this and are very outraged. And then there are other folks who probably aren't gonna hear much about this at all.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right.
What Amy said. Yeah, we are in bubbles. The American population is vulnerable to receiving conspiracy theories and accepting them as reality. And there is no defined truth. And that sort of social isolation allows people to go into the dark recesses of the internet and find things that confirm their beliefs and lead to really dangerous places.
And it's obviously front of mind, especially for those of us here in the media. How do we get that truth out there? What do we do? But another topic that does overlap with these sharp divides, primaries. We have some tomorrow, some good ones. North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and others. I just got back from the Keystone State. Fantastic few days there. Republicans in the Senate race have three very conservative candidates, including this sort of new surging Kathy Barnett. Democrats have an unconventional Senate candidate as well, John Fetterman, the lieutenant governor. I want to ask you, Tam, is the idea of who can win changing? There used to be a formula. These aren't formulaic candidates.
Right. It's someone like a Dave McCormick, who's one of the Republican candidates. He's a veteran. He had success in business. If you went back 10 years to Republican candidate central casting, you would find him. But then Trump got elected, and the idea of what is electable, I think, has changed somewhat. Mm-hmm. Someone like John Fetterman is not traditionally considered even remotely electable. He doesn't care. He shows up in a hoodie and gym shorts for a meeting with the president of the United States. And yet he is, appealing to rural voters. He's appealing to working class voters that Democrats have been struggling with. So and someone like Barnett grabs attention, makes people have passion. And I don't know if they're going to win their primaries. I'm not here to make predictions. But I think that they are an example of candidates who are potentially redefining what it means.
Except we kind of flipped the script, Lisa. In 2018 and 2020, the one thing that unified Democrats was getting rid of Donald Trump. Yeah. And that meant electing in primaries the most electable candidate, which usually meant the most moderate to centrist.
Center, right, yeah.
On the Democratic side here, you have John Fetterman, who not only doesn't look the part with the sweatshirt and the shorts, but he comes from the Bernie Sanders wing of the party, which, again, in the 2018-2020 version of Democrats, they would say, whoa, maybe that's a little too dangerous in a state as conservative as Pennsylvania, and we should elect the more moderate. In this case, though, what Democrats are looking for is somebody who's going to be a fighter because they're frustrated that they're not seeing that from the party right now, and Fetterman's giving that.
All right. Amy Walter, Tamara Keith, great discussion. Thank you both.
You're welcome.